Hello and welcome to GCSE English Revision Pods. First of all, we need to apologise for the big gap between podcasts, don't we, Mr. Forster?
Yeah, it's been a long time. We've been distant, both literally and figuratively.
Yes, and both being pretty useless when it comes to technology. We've only just found a way that we think is hopefully going to work and will enable us to record a lot more in the future. I need to start off with a quick caveat for people at my new school, my lovely students at my new school,
who've been
using this. This podcast today, we are recording on something that you are not studying for your GCSE. So my current students in 2019, you can go and use any of the other ones that are there on Christmas Carol, on Power and Conflict, on Macbeth, on an Inspector Calls, but this cluster of poems we are doing for students at Mr. Forster's school and all over the country, of course.
My school doesn't do it either.
Oh, we're just doing it to be nice for other people around
this
the country.
Just an act of altruistic grace.
What are we doing that for? All right, but worry not, we will do much more relevant podcasts as well in the coming weeks, won't we?
They're all relevant, Mr. Galley. Just depends who the listener is. Anyway.
This is true. I'm being incredibly biased. But anyway, it's nice to talk to you. It's been a long time.
Yeah.
We've made it to our first half term in different parts of the country without each other. It's been quite emotional.
And the poems we're looking at today are about changing distant relationships. And I think that's quite an apt metaphor for us, Mr. Galley.
Oh, my goodness. It couldn't be more
relevant.
Except
for the fact that you're not my
father. Not literally, but I think in many ways I do fulfil that kind of role in your life. So it's going to be an emotional pod in many ways. It's going to be hard.
I feel we should introduce what we're doing, actually. So we're looking at love and relationships. This is our second episode on love and relationships. And we're going to be looking at a question today that says, compare how poets present parent-child relationships in Follower and one other poem.
Ah, okay. So you've gone for two. I think a lot of students are going to be happy straight away because you've gone for two very short poems.
Yeah, I mean, classic choice, isn't it?
I think people sometimes slightly misinterpret that, don't they? So they think that, oh, brilliant, short poems are much easier to write about.
Yeah, but actually these are two quite complex and quite interesting poems. So before we kick off with our thesis and things, as we always do, I thought it's worth a little bit of context that's worth knowing about them. Not that you'd start your essay by writing this. I mean, that's something we really need to remind students. Never start an essay by just listing interesting facts about the author, because it's never interesting. We start with our thesis, with our argument. But for the purposes of the podcast, it's useful, I think, to know this. So the poem we've selected to go with Follower is called Mother Any Distance by Simon Armitage.
Nice.
And it connects really, really well, I think. There's other poems you could have picked. You could have looked at Before You Were Mine. You could have looked at Eden Rock. But I think this makes a really strong connection. So Mother Any Distance was published in Simon Armitage's 1993 collection, Book of Matches, along with 29 other sonnets. And I think that's a really important point to note before we read it, because it's actually got 15 lines, this poem. And yet the fact that it's published alongside these other sonnets clearly sets it up as engaging with that form. And it makes us even want to question perhaps why are there 15 lines up 14 lines, which we're going to come back to later on. But I think that's a really useful point to keep in the back of your mind.
We're going to keep in the back of our minds why he's subverted the typical form of the sonnet.
Yeah, and it's definitely become important later in the episode. Spoiler alert. I should also say that Mother Any Distance is an autobiographical collection. They shed light on Armitage's own childhood. Follower by Seamus Heaney is also an autobiographical poem about Heaney's relationship with his father growing up in the farmlands of County Derry in Ireland as the oldest of eight siblings. So
fantastic.
Both poems, therefore, autobiographical, engaging with parent-child relationships. I think that's the obvious reason as to why we chose them.
Okay. That makes a lot of sense.
Should we kick off with the thesis then?
I think that's a good idea.
Yeah, so the comparative thesis, can you briefly remind our students, why do we call an introduction a thesis?
Well, what we're saying there is that actually an introduction is can be a relatively simple form, right? An introduction, the trap that you might fall into is just saying, here's one poem I'm going to talk about, here's another poem that I'm going to talk about. When your introduction becomes a thesis is when you use that introduction to set out your argument for the entire essay and really explain not just that you're going to talk about these two poems, but what the argument is that's going to run through this essay.
Yeah, and for AQA, in the top band on the Mark scheme, they talk about having a conceptualized argument, which means setting up an idea, a thread, that an opinion about the text you're studying that runs through the whole essay. So our thesis is as follows, and you can find this on the handout, which you can download.
Yes, absolutely. Should we divert people to that if they haven't already? If you're listening to this on a podcast app, you can just go into the description of this episode where there is a link to the handout to download. Or if you are on our website, englishrevisionpod.co.uk, if you go back into the website or the description on Acast, you can click on the link in both those places.
It's a pretty sweet looking website that I had nothing to do with.
I know.
Mr. Galley did it all.
Thank you. I mean, you do most of the actual podcast, so I suppose designing a website was the least I could do, really. But thank you. Thank you all the same.
So our thesis is as follows. While Seamus Heaney's Follower and Mother Any Distance by Simon Armitage are both intensely personal poems, there is something universal about the ways in which they explore the changing relationships children have with their parents as they grow older. Both engage with the ambivalence of an individual grappling with their burgeoning independence and coming to terms with what it means to be an adult. Arguably, however, Heaney goes much further than Armitage in exploring this change, depicting the ultimate inversion of parent-child relationships that happens with the infirmity of old age.
Right, nice. So you've done that thing which I think is always an excellent way to approach a poetry essay, is talking about what they do in a similar way, but then developing that line of inquiry to talk about what they do that's a little bit different. If we can simplify the language slightly, I suppose what you're saying is that growing up is quite hard. Both of these poems look at how your feelings are quite complicated towards your parents as you become an independent adult, right?
Yeah, it's like that classic teenager thing where, you know, you go through that phase of thinking your parents don't understand you, and yet you also love them at the same time. But actually, right, as you get older still, dear listeners, your relationship continues to change. When you leave home, you go off to university or into the world of work.
Yeah.
And ultimately,
you start paying bills.
Yeah, and ultimately then your parents get old and it changes again. They're actually quite moving poems. I find them quite, for that reason. A few vocabulary words that are on your sheet. We've got the word ambivalence, which we seem to use quite a lot. The idea of having mixed feelings.
That's a great word.
And burgeoning, which I really like. It's a lovely word for meaning growing. So burgeoning feelings is kind of like new feelings. Burgeoning independence is new independence. So.
The burgeoning international success of this podcast.
Indeed. Weren't we like the 11th most popular podcast in some strange, far-flung corner of the world? Or was that a spam?
I think it might have been a spam email, but it was still nice to...
Anyway.
It certainly worked.
So that's our thesis. So our thesis is that both poems are impersonal poems. They're looking at the ambivalence of a child growing older and their relationship with their parent, but also they're different because Heaney goes much further in exploring how that relationship continues to change as your parents get really old. So we'll start our first paragraph with the obvious point, which is initially there is certainly something comparable in the connection the speakers feel with their parents in the two poems.
Right, so you're going in and you're saying that on the surface of things that there is certainly some similarity in terms of the connection and the emotions that speakers feel towards their parents.
Yeah, they explore that basic connection that we have with our parents. So let's start with Mother Any Distance, because I think it's quite an interesting one. I mean, if we come back to that idea that we said before, that it's clearly published alongside 29 other sonnets, it's clearly engaging with the sonnet form. So it lacks the regular metre and rhyme of traditional sonnets. It has an extra line, and yet it's written in the second person to the speaker's mother, and it's about moving beyond childhood. So why, oh why, might it have an extra line?
I mean, is it to show that this... I mean, sonnets, of course, I'm just going off the top of my head here, traditionally engaging with love.
Yeah.
Is it to show that this is a more complex form of love and a more, perhaps in some ways, a more real form of love, but also one that doesn't fit neatly into the form of romantic love as depicted in a typical sonnet?
Yeah, I mean, definitely. I mean, this is about the love a son feels for his mother as he leaves home. It is a tender love poem. Yeah. But it's also, I mean, I definitely like your explanation there. I think the other way you could look at it, and remember, students, it's great to have evaluative ideas in your essays, is that this is a poem about moving beyond the family home, moving beyond that comfortable mother-son relationship that you have growing up into one that has to change as you... Because the poem explores literally... The speaker measuring his new house that he's presumably about to move into and leaving the family home, but his mother's there holding the measuring tape with him, and the poem ends with this image of him right at the end of the measuring tape, her holding onto the very tip as if, you know, hanging on to the last vestiges of their relationship as he prepares to move out.
Oh, it's so sad.
So I think it's quite significant. We could start by talking about the poetic form. It's about moving beyond childhood, stepping beyond the bounds, the form, the comfort of that maternal relationship you have as a child.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. The same way that the poet is stepping out of the form of the sonnet, and it is also representative of him stepping out of that comfortable form of love.
Yeah, and whenever making... I mean, I really hate essays that just talk about structures separate from language, and AQA vindicated me this year in the examiners report. They said they hate it too, because I know some teachers say, do your language point, then your structure point, in different paragraphs. Mm. But I think there's a lovely point we can tie in here, which is that actually the form of the poem is kind of echoed in the imagery. So, the central metaphor in this poem is how... the mother is, as we just said, is helping measure her son's new home, taking out this spool of tape, and that spool of tape, that tape measure, is compared to the tether that connects astronauts to a spaceship. It's compared implicitly even to the umbilical cord. And I think it's quite interesting that actually that tether on a spaceship is its nickname is the umbilical cord. So it's all about this kind of poem about a connection between a son and a mother.
So ironically, she's using something that reminds her of all this connection, but the function of that device, the function of that item is that it's actually enabling him to move away from her.
Yeah, so, and the poem ends with Heaney measuring the two floors up, so presumably a loft room, while she's still on the floor. And this is where the poem goes beyond the literal, because it would seem slightly odd to be measuring the height of a house. And instead it becomes clearly a metaphor with him right at the loft hatch, looking open onto an endless sky. Yeah, there's the suggestion, this tape measure now is no longer a literal tape measure. This is all a symbol of their changing relationship as he stretches out towards freedom.
Right.
And I think this is kind of an easy comparison to make with Follower. Because if we look at Follower now, this is a bit like Heaney's perhaps most famous poem, Digging. It's all about his admiration for his father. But what's quite interesting with Heaney's relationship with his father and his poems about his father is that they're filled with this kind of idolatry, this worship, but also a recognition that perhaps they're quite different people.
Right.
So his father was a farmer, and there's a really interesting metaphor at the start to describe him. He's described as having looking like a ship with shoulders globed like a full sail strung. I think, you know, what kind of image is that? Shoulders globed, a sail. What is his father?
I suppose it's a couple of things, isn't it? It's the traditional notion of masculinity that you might think that Heaney admired as a child. You know, that his shoulders are broad and they're wide and they depict strength. But also the idea of a full sail, I suppose, connotes that he can do anything. You know, like a ship enjoys the freedom offered to it by the oceans, his father's shoulders maybe speak to this idea that he could sail off into any adventure or anything like this.
Yeah, but what's interesting is whilst Heaney does this metaphor's then extended in as the poem goes on, whilst Heaney notes that sometimes he would ride on his father's back, sometimes he rode me on his back, often he remembers himself stumbling in his hobnailed wake. And I think that word wake is quite interesting, the idea that, you know, if his father is like a ship, rather than being on this sailing ship, travelling the world with his father, where is he?
He's left behind in the slipstream, yeah. Trying to keep up. I experienced not exactly the same thing, but when I was growing up, my dad was quite a good semi-professional footballer where I grew up, and I wasn't. And a lot of I remember when I was sort of playing. I remember playing at under 16 level, and I would turn up and teams were typically managed by people who knew my dad, and they'd see my name on the team sheet, and they'd be like, "Yeah, oh, he's next generation."
Galley, he's gonna be good, isn't he?
And then about 2 minutes, that it was terrible. But yeah, few seconds after seeing me play, they realised that it had not, it was not in the genes, unfortunately. But yes, I can sympathise with Heaney feeling like he's trudging along in his father's wake at this point in the poem.
And I think that's also kind of tight. If we go back to the description of his shoulders being globed, I think this is quite an interesting metaphor, because it both implies the shape of the muscles that kind of wrap, you know, the spherical, like if you look at somebody who's got big shoulders, like for example me.
Well, I was going to say, is there a mirror there?
globed implies, but it also implies the kind of vast, as if he's like Atlas from Greek mythology, holding up the world on his shoulders.
Essentially, he feels like his father can do anything. Right, he's the hero of this part of the poem. Yeah. He's this almost mythological figure.
Yeah. And to connect this, therefore, with Mother in the Distance, there's both a similarity and a difference here, isn't there? Both good speakers that clearly have this intensely personal connection with their parents. You know, Armitage with his mother, Heaney with his father. And yet, what's perhaps slightly different here immediately is that. I think Armitage's poem is about a boy kind of going away from his mother, whereas actually what we're seeing the opposite in Follower, of a boy stumbling in his father's wake. We see almost two different movements within those relationships early on in the poems.
And it's interesting that lines are going off on a slight tangent here, but lines are kind of significant in both, aren't they? We've got the line of the father's movement that the son sort of traipses along in, and then we've got this line between the mother and the son, which is ever extending and ever getting longer, almost to now breaking point.
Yeah, and I think that leads us really nicely into our second paragraph, which is actually how, nevertheless, there's actually an apparent ambivalence in the depiction of both speakers' relationships with their respective parents. That actually these relationships, as you kind of said early on, are complicated. It's not a simple, oh, I love you, mum, poem. Neither of them is about that. They're both kind of quite complex.
Yeah.
So if we go back to Mother Any Distance, I think what's interesting is that there's this ambivalence that the speaker recognises that he needs his mother to measure any distance greater than a single span. The poem begins, "Mother, any distance greater than a single span requires a second pair of hands." And then we see the sense that he might need her, and then how he describes the space that follows. We have all these metaphors that telescope time and space. There's acres of walls, prairies of the floors. And then the tape even becomes more of a metaphor, and he says that it's unreeling years between us.
That's interesting. So it's actually he's understanding the hugeness of the situation at this moment in time.
This tape is not just a tape, it's a symbol.
Yeah, okay, nice.
Actually, you know, as I've got a two-year-old son now, it kind of hits me, and where it hurts, that the idea of, like, you know, the years unreeling between you and your child. Actually, it's quite a poignant image.
It's horrible, isn't it? And it's, I suppose it's the great paradox at the heart of parenting, is that if you do a good job, there will come a time when they don't need you anymore. And I suppose that's such a strange thought in a lot of ways.
Maybe I should
do
a less good job. You know,
so yeah, well, that's perhaps so.
I mean, my son orders me around at the moment. Every time day when I get him from work, he goes, "Daddy, roll," and then he rolls me around the living room. Every day. So
that's a nice image. Yeah,
well, there's definitely a metaphor there. But to come back to the poem, I think the other bit with the ambivalence, though, is alongside this recognition of the tape unreeling the years between them, there's also this strange term of address that the poem begins. He says, "Mother, any distance," not "mum" or "mummy." There's this always this odd formality that, you know, perhaps encapsulates the way in which, you know, we don't necessarily know how to relate to our parents as we get older. You know, if you go home and say "mummy," there's something. You know, it seems quite childish.
And yet "mother" seems overly formal.
Yeah, so there's a sense of this discomfort, perhaps, with a changing relationship.
So in the poet's address, you're almost getting the feeling like that even within language, a adult-parent relationship, an adult-parent-child relationship is quite a complicated thing. It's almost like the correct terminology doesn't exist
for it. It's the same with any kind of adult-child relationship, because I find this with like ex-students, when you see them in the shopping centre years later, and they refuse to use any kind of terms of address, because they can't call you Mr. Forster. But equally, to come up to me and say, "Hello, Peter," would be a bit weird.
Unnatural.
We just say "hello," and there's an odd pause as we both feel the discomfort that space brings. And then we go back our separate ways.
Both humiliated by the encounter.
Also see this in the metaphors, going back to the poem, that there's two metaphors at the centre of the poem, both separated by the only caesuras of the poem, which I think is important. Clearly, Armitage is bringing our attention towards them, and that's anchor and kite. Two metaphors, one word sentences that sum up and encapsulate the relationship between them. And what's quite interesting is both are ambivalent. Right. So an anchor can be something that weighs you down, that makes you sink, that stops you being free. But actually, if you're a kite, why do you need an anchor? Because what happens otherwise? You blow up into the sky.
You fly off, absolutely. Yeah. So it's whether where is that line between being held still and being secure?
Yeah, and this certainly ties in also with the idea of him spacewalking, of this tether, this umbilical cord connecting them, actually, you know, not just preventing him from finding freedom, but also perhaps protecting him from the strangeness of the adult world. We see this also in the rhyme, I think, as another kind of structural point to go in, that at the start, it begins with a series of rhymes, but as the poem goes on, these rhymes drift apart, just like the mother and son drift apart, except it ends with a rhyming couplet. As if there is some kind of harmony in leaving home. And it ends with this strange image of him almost as a baby bird, a fledgling. He says, to fall or fly. But the fact that it comes back to this run, this sense that there's something natural, there's something right in this final conclusion. This is what happens in nature. You grow up as a baby bird, and then you leave the nest, and you either fall or fly on your own.
It's kind of similar to the poem Material by Roz Barber, which some students might study if they go on to do A-level. It's and the way it ends up, if you wanted a bit of cross-textual research to do, I think that would be a nice one to look at.
Yeah, it's kind of the sense that actually the conclusion to growing up, to any parent-child relationship, as you kind of suggested, is that freedom.
And then having to find your own way.
I think there's a similar ambivalence in Heaney, but I think it's much more pronounced. Because what's clear, I think, as we already alluded to in Follower, is that the speaker doesn't always ride on his father's back. Sometimes he follows in his broad shadow, in his wake. There's the suggestion that he's following his father, but actually he's not tethered to him like the son and mother any distance. The connection is more idolatry, perhaps, we could say.
Yeah, you might need to... you could say that, but you'd probably also need to say what it meant.
What does it mean?
Yeah.
Worship.
So there you worship, go. Like an idol.
Yeah. Like an idol. And then we've got this kind of, again, reflective structurally, I think, with the kind of the mixture of full and pararhymes that run through each quatrain of the poem. There's this sense of uncertainty, unease, as you don't quite, you know, you don't quite know whether to expect a full rhyme in each stanza. There's this sense of dissonance, this sense perhaps of this mixed relationship, this changing, complicated relationship between father and son.
So the structural point holds true for both of them, really, whether that be through the rhyme or whether that be through the structure of the sonnet. Both poems are essentially mirroring the difficulties in the relationships, or the complexities in the relationships.
I think difficulties is maybe the wrong word. I think more complexities is better, that this is not a simple thing. This is something that's changing, that's malleable, that's plastic.
Yeah, this is true. I was just laughing because I was watching The Office last night, and there's a bit where he says malleable and you sounded really David Brennan. I'm sorry, but
he is my management idol.
I was gonna say
that's how I've been running my apartment.
let's get into the third stanza, because we're over 23 minutes and I'm worried that
way too long. Sorry.
Our dear listeners are already bored as all.
So, final paragraph. Perhaps the ultimate difference between the two poems is how, although they both explore the way parent-child relationships change over time, Armitage simply explores the liminality of a child on the threshold of adult life, whilst Heaney goes further to engage with the changes that continue after the child has left home.
My favourite topic sentence.
Top 10 words of all time for me, liminality.
Liminality.
It's not quite as good as my favourite word, which is cleave, but,
Listeners, I'm gonna save you from Mr. Forster's 10-minute lecture about the ambiguous double meaning of cleave in what is it, in the prelude?
No, in Milton.
In fact, no, what am I doing? I'm literally asking you a question about it. Right, we'll stop right there. Tell us what liminality means instead.
So it means on the threshold, in between two things. So if you're in a liminal state, you aren't quite in one place or quite in the other. So like the liminality of our podcast, as we, in geographically separate locations, come together for this beautiful moment of speaking on air.
and also in metaphorically different places in terms of how well we understand these two poems, perhaps. That's why I didn't prepare, so you could talk about liminality in such a real world sense. So let's get into this paragraph.
So the liminality in Mother and Existence is pretty obvious. It's written in the present tense, an incredibly important point to note.
It's right in that moment there.
It's in
and
that
then.
Moment, and it explores a single moment that's meant to encapsulate a bigger relationship. It's the meditation on the way in which family relationships change, but through depicting this single moment of tape measuring a new home. And nowhere is this more evident, perhaps, than in the final stanza, as we said before, where the mother spooled out tape as he's two floors above her. This is not a literal image. No mother would measure out, how high is my house? This is clearly a metaphor. It's clearly when the poem moves beyond the literal to the figurative, as it becomes clear that this is about moving upwards, moving towards the sky. And the sky, has that promise of freedom, and his mother is left clinging to the last 100th of an inch. But I think what's crucial is we don't see that final step. We're left in this liminal state. We're left with the mother not having let go of her son. She's still holding the very bottom of the tape measure, and he's right at the roof. And it would be a bit weird, a weird poem. Like, he's presumably not going to jump out of the window of the house, because I've not done any house viewings where that's what I do, really.
No. Is this tape measure, are we meant to think that it's a one that you unroll? It's not one with a little rotor in it that brings it back when you press the button?
Oh, I hadn't even thought of that. Yeah, it's a nice idea. But then, again, that'd be a bit quite,
But when it continues to spool out tape... No, it's not that one, is it? It's one of those... so there isn't... Because I was wondering, is there that metaphor there that she could... at the moment's touch, it would bring them close back together.
No,
but I don't think it is like that, is it?
He's going to the sky, so he's not going back down. He's going upwards.
No, it's really... leaves her just clinging on to that very last bit.
And I think that liminality is kind of... is quite different from Follower, whereas in Follower, the title is transformed in the final stanza, because the follower for most of this poem, we infer, is Heaney himself. There's a young boy.
Yeah.
He's a nuisance, tripping, falling, yapping. That zoomorphic suggestion with that yapping, that he's like a little dog. Following around. But there's a really interesting transformation in the third from last line in the final stanza. He says, "But today, it is my father who keeps stumbling behind me and will not go away." The technical term for that word today is a deictic, which is on your handout, dear listener. But that's like a word that requires context to understand it. So if I say, "Look at that man, this day, today," and it brings us, what it really does is it brings us into the moment. Just like the present tense of Mother Any Distance, it brings us into the moment of this poem. But the moment here is not Heaney in a liminal state, not as a child on the threshold of adult life. It's Heaney as an adult looking at his father, who's now an old man, and is now behind him stumbling. There's something cyclical here, the idea that actually parent relationships continue to change even once you've left home, and that dynamic shifts as they become ultimately dependent on you and become an annoyance.
You see them as these... Well, you wouldn't say that about my own dear parents, but of course, there's that changing thing, isn't there? And maybe also a slightly more metaphorical side, as well as his father becoming old and perhaps, sort of physically weaker. Maybe as well, you get to understand as you're older that your parents are human beings. They have flaws. They're not the superhuman entities you think they are when you're a child, and that humanity is perhaps what is stumbling along behind Heaney as well as his father's physical self.
It's why, as a final note, I think we've pretty much finished the essay here. Dear listeners, if you want a good book to read To Kill a Mockingbird, but then read Go Set the Watchman, because that's exactly what it does. She punctures like the myths of Atticus Finch and points out that he's just a human. Amazing book.
I've not read it yet, but it's certainly on the list.
Anyway, I think that's pretty much us done. So conclusion, obviously, we come back to what are Heaney and Arndt saying about parent-child relationships. They're complicated, they're complex, they're constantly changing. And it's often nice to have something personal in conclusion. Is there anything we can learn from this? Are they relevant to us, man?
Yeah, very nice. I like it. Sorry we've rambled on for half an hour. We normally try and get these things in 20 minutes, don't we? But I suppose we're just so excited to be back on the airwaves that we've perhaps overrun slightly.
To Mr. Galley, because
this is the only way we communicate now. Liminal figure in your life. Okay, so As I said earlier, everything you need is on our website, englishrevisionpod.co.uk. There you can find every episode we've ever done, including the ones on Romeo and Juliet, on Macbeth, on An Inspector Calls, on Power and Conflict Poetry, on both the AQA language papers as well. And have I missed anything? Jekyll and Hyde. Anyway, there's loads there. Go and have a look. Anything you need will be on there. Twitter, we are at GRevisionPod. And if they want to email us, Mr. Forster?
EnglishRevisionPod@gmail.com.
Fantastic. Well, thank you very much for joining us, and we will see you next time.